trying to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you learn from industry leaders and permobile experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra. You're listening to something great. You finally arrived at the place.
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it.
Welcome to episode 51 of Wheelchair Nerds. In this episode, we're joined by Ryan Harrison, a field marketing manager at United Access, competitive parachuter, and former customer turned accessibility advocate. A motorcycle accident caused him to turn to adaptive driving. Ryan talks about how he overcame his injury, insights on funding, innovation in mobility tech, and the importance of collaboration across clinicians, ATPs, and mobility dealers. This episode is packed with some great stories, humor, and spirit. Let's jump in. Ryan, thanks for your time and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's one of those things where I saw you guys were doing this, and obviously that's, you know, I got here because I slid in your DMs and was like, hey guys, can I be a part of this? Do you want to talk about the vehicles wheelchairs go into? And if so, I probably know a guy. So.
That's a subtle, like, I like that, Ryan, because we tell people that all the time. Like, at the end of the podcast, we're like, do you have an idea for a guest, or, you know, slide into our DMs? Like, we're happy to do it. So, people, it's true. We do respond to DMs. And if you message us and have a really solid idea, you could be the next Ryan.
It's a dangerous proposition to be the next me, for sure.
Yeah. So, I gave you a brief intro, Ryan, but could you kind of introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Yeah. So I'm a paraplegic. I was in a motorcycle accident, as most males in their 30s are when they become a spinal cord injury patient. I had two really good breaks. So I'm an incomplete at T5. And I've regained some feeling and muscle control from below my injury level there. But then I also burst fractured T11 and 12. So I have a really cool piece of hardware in my back holding that all together. So my fusion is T10 to L1. And from that situation down, you know, I'm the typical ragdoll paraplegic, where I'm very fortunate that I don't have a lot of spasms or any of the other stuff, like mid transfer, like I see a lot of my friends and stuff in. So I'm always stoked about that, but also I would imagine it's also cool to see your legs move if you can't control it. But you know, life goes on. Let's see. And then professionally on the side, I also do a lot of competitive shooting, that I found through the, I kind of shot stuff pre-accident, but I was never competitive. It was just kind of like, you know, I live in America, bang, bang, right? Kind of stuff. And post-accident, I found, you know, air rifle stuff, like the Olympic style shooting. And then from there, I was reading the rules and I saw a mention of paratrap, which is shotguns. And I was like, oh man, shotguns sound cool too. Let's go down this path. And I actually last week, I just came back from shooting my first World Shooting Parasport Grand Prix up at Hillsdale, Michigan, and managed to bring home a sweet bronze medal from it. So nice. I'm pretty stoked about that.
Are we going to see you in the Paralympics one day, maybe?
So that would be the goal. But unfortunately, the IPC, the International Paralympic Committee has not made the sport official for 2028. So I'm one of those people in the Paralympic sphere that don't get to go to the big show. It turns out, but it's okay. Like I think I'm still going to do it anyway. But it would be way cooler if they could say, hey, we're going to have the big show in 2028, especially since it's already a regular Olympic sport. Mm-hmm. Like they've already got the facility.
Why not just
let us come do the thing and do that. Cause the other impressive thing is it's the same exact sport. They don't make any changes. The only difference is I do it from a wheelchair. It's the same, the targets are the same speed. You're shooting pretty much the same shotgun. You know, it's a little more adjusted for, you know, whatnot, but there's no real like third party adaptations that happen in that sport outside of, some of the other classes like amputees and whatnot, right? Like they might have a different prosthetic or something that helps them shoot, but it's the same exact sport when it comes down to it. So I think it should be, but I'm also extremely biased.
Well, yeah. I will say that the recreation therapist by background and me is very happy that you have found a leisure activity that you enjoy. And I don't practice what I preach, but I love to hear people are having interest in activities and stuff outside of work, because that's awesome. So props to you for that.
Thanks. Well, and it turned into also a big thing too, because I ended up now I coach our local program for air rifle through the Move United sphere.
Right.
And so Monday nights with the Disabled Athletes Sports Association here in St. Louis, we're in their equipment box shooting air rifles. And, you know, fortunately we've got a few really good first year shooters this year that are on their way to nationals to go see what it's like to shoot in like a really competitive environment. So I'm pretty stoked.
That's awesome. Well, we could do a whole other podcast on that. And we may one day, because I'm super fascinated, because my nephew really got into trap shooting in high school.
Nice.
So I've shot a few times with my brother and with him. And maybe we'll do a podcast on that. But
love it.
Let's circle back. So it was interesting when you reached out to us, you slid in each of our DMs on LinkedIn. I of course jumped at the opportunity because I've pondered this for a while, learning more about the world of adaptive vehicles. Our listeners know I worked at a pediatric hospital for a number of years. And so I would find two different, you know, paths of helping the clients when I worked there, right? Like you had the parents who had a child who had some sort of catastrophic injury. They're too large to be in your standard car seat. They needed to remain in their wheelchair for transport, and families were like, what do I do? And then also the situation of having some, you know, very age-appropriate questions from teenagers who either were driving prior, and I had a couple of kids that had been in drag racing accidents, and then, you know, a couple of other kids who had spina bifida, had cerebral palsy, as they were coming of age, and they're watching their peers, you know, learn how to drive, they had the same questions. So we, I believe it was last season, I think it was season two, I have to go back and look. We did have a friend of mine who works down at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, and he gave the occupational therapy perspective. And I kept thinking, give a great perspective on the evaluation process, but, and really what goes into becoming certified as a therapist to be able to help people learn to drive. But in the back of my mind, every time I go to Abilities Expo, I would look at all of like the Braun vehicles, Toyota vehicles. You know, I would think to myself, I'm like, we're missing that piece of the podcast. So when you reached out, you were a perfect fit as far as I was concerned, coming on here to chat about some stuff.
Well, that's good news, because it's one of those things that, like, as a marketer in this industry that is adjacent to your industry, because we sell the vehicles and make the modifications for the people that use your product to be able to continue their freedom to go out into the world. And it's one of those things that, like, it does, you're absolutely correct. It does seem like there's this weird disconnect of mm-hmm. industries when it comes to that, because it's you know, it's pretty much just like the wheelchair side, and then there's like this driving side that's connected to it, but like running parallel, and like they don't really talk, and it's really one of those funny things. Whenever I do I do a course with Namita, which is the I'm gonna mess this up now that I'm on camera, and they're gonna shoot me because I'm on a few of their on a committee with them, but it's they're basically the National Mobility Equipment Dealers Association. Nailed it. And they allow us to do the CEU course for you know, OTs, PTs, case managers, and allow us to introduce that 101 very high level introduction of what adaptive driving looks like for their patients, who to contact, how the process works. We dip a little bit into what it's like to be if you're a passenger, non-driver, if you're, you know, what the driving process looks like. And because we are at a medical facility and sometimes they do have some commercial aspects, you know, we do cover what, you know, some of the non-emergency medical transport options and stuff look like. But it's really one of those things that I focus on it so much because we don't even have it's not even that we have a brand awareness problem with us. I mean, like, obviously you and I know Braun, we know all the other manufacturers, but we have an industry awareness problem where people just they're just not aware of what's out there. Right. Like, I mean, like, Hawken, how many different kinds of hand controls are there to drive your vehicle? Like, there's so many different ones, right? So it's you know, do you want to do a push pull to brake, a push rock? They've got like a motorcycle one. If there's if you're like a high level quad, you know, I've even seen people drive or have motor function or have their vehicle set up to like do sip and puff stuff, right? Like, it's wild. There's so many answers and you really don't know until you talk to somebody. And yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love what I do, is because you just get to, you know, educate people on what's possible.
So how did you end up, before we jump into, because we're definitely going to get into talking about, and Hawken's got some great questions for logistics that somebody who would reach out to you, be like, hey, I need help, like a customer. But I got to know what led you to United Access. Make sure I got the right company. Okay.
Yeah.
And then explain that a little bit to folks, because initially you and I were talking, I was like, I've got a Braun email address. Now I reached out to Braun because we've got friends at Braun. They were like, well, technically it works for you. So one, how did you get into it? Like, why did you decide to go work for United Access? And then two, explain that relationship a little bit so folks know that, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So my journey, as most spinal cord injuries do, started back at inpatient rehab. And, you know, you're sitting there doing all your OT for 5 hours a day and your PT and all that stuff. And then your case manager comes up to you and says, hey, do you think you want to go back to work? And they, you know, they asked that at least that important question for me. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, my brain's going nuts here. You know, I'm physically exhausted and mentally like hyper and not doing anything. So I wanted to put my brain to work as fast as possible. I ended up, fortunately, I came from the motorcycle industry. So before my accident, and ended up going back to it. So I ended up going to work for Harley Davidson Corporate, in their sale and kind of like the sales training side, the Harley Davidson University. So the internal sales training stuff, competitive analysis, to kind of, you know, tell people what we do better, to come up with like sales rebuttals and, you know, but also understand what some of the competition does better. And, you know, sometimes talk to an engineer about like maybe why this works so well and what we could do to improve our product. And so there, it was one of those things. I had gotten that job after I had my customer experience at United Access. So, you know, to go back to work, that, you know, vocational rehab is going to help you modify my home. This door actually behind me is thanks to vocational rehab, because the actual door to this room is over here. And you can't make that turn in the hallway in a wheelchair. It's too tight. So that's actually my foyer to my front room. and they, you know, they made that whole, did the whole deal for the bathroom roll under sink and all that fun stuff with vocational rehab, and then got the conversion, the hand controls and the modifications. They paid for that, so I was really only out the cost of a brand new Toyota Sienna at that point, as opposed to the high price tag that you would see if you looked at our website and didn't know of a third party pay option like vocational rehab. So I would, with that customer experience, though, to get back on track, so I'll go down some rabbit holes. So with that customer experience that I made really good friends with our general manager, Ryan Jones, at the Fenton, the South St. Louis location. And we were just talking, and, you know, I went back to work for Harley, and he knew that. And, you know, he just got to know me as a person, which is what a lot of our stores do a really good job of with our customers, just because, like, nobody's lining up to be a customer on, there's no Black Friday deals, you know, that kind of thing. Like, in my case, you wake up a customer, and, you know, now you got to have a partner for life in this, you know, if you want to get some, you know, whether it be your wheelchair manufacturer or your other stuff, you know, we're definitely not going away. So it's, it was one of those things that he mentioned that there was a position open. I applied. Oh, so there's a position open. I applied. I talked to Emily Sander at that time, who was at United Access. She came from Braun Ability. And now she's gone back to Braun Ability. So it's, you know, with the confusion that you mentioned earlier, it's one of those things that I had some conversations with her, did not end up taking the job, the first one, ended up taking another one after it came up that piqued my interest, and came over, mostly just because I really enjoyed the prospect of helping people like myself. And figuring out, like, it's one of those things that, like, man, this industry needs help. I can use a lot of my, a lot of the things that I know, whether, you know, tribal knowledge from years of marketing motorcycles and selling them, and, you know, just a lot of transferable skills there, and bring those over here and try to help out. And I told myself that if I could make this industry better than how I found it, I feel like I've done a good job. And I'm both fortunately and unfortunately, it was a little easier than I thought it would be. But there's still a lot of work to do. So that's kind of how I ended up where I am, my store relationship with United Access as a customer, and, you know, deciding to take the leap back over after having some cool conversations with people within the industry. And second part of that question was what's the difference, I guess, between United Access and Braun Ability? And the best way to describe it is Braun Ability owns United Access, and United Access is the retail arm. So like for Permobil, you guys make the wheelchairs, and then you have all these people that sell them, and in this case, they own one of the people that sells them.
Gotcha.
So we are the retail arm, and we do, you know, we sell more than just Braun products, because we sell hand controls. Braun doesn't sell those. We sell, you know, other modifications that they don't do. So my cheesy marketing brain made up the term that nobody uses, but I keep trying to make fetch happen, Braun Ability makes the Wave, which in our industry is the wheelchair accessible vehicle. Yep. But United Access gives you the whole hello, because we finished the vehicle, right? So it's
perfect.
I know, but nobody wants. You know,
my next call with Emily and team, I will be like, you know what? Ryan had this really great line.
I love it. She's going to be like, of course you did. it's just one of those things that, like, it's, you know, it's the best way to say it, because, like, you know, Braun makes this great blank canvas for getting a wheelchair into a vehicle, and has options for being on the driver or passenger side if you so choose or are able. And, you know, United Access as a company is going to take that van and finish it out to the specifications that are needed to get somebody back on the road or just traveling safely in their wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. And Q Strength is a part of the Braun.
Yeah. So to add even more, a year ago, 2 years ago, Braunability had some ownership in Q Strength, but then they got more of it. And so now they're part of the Braun family as well. So now we do have some of those commercial restraint options, the QLK system, which is the, I call it the semi-truck fifth wheel that a wheelchair will lock into to drive, and even just their tie down straps. Like I was a fan of their tie down straps the first time I ever saw them, just because they were so easy to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Now so, I'll let you talk. I'm sorry. I'll be quiet.
Yeah. No. I think that was good, just to kind of lay the foundation of where you came from, who you are, and I think you know, being a customer and then turning into working for the company rings a bell to me. Anyway,
familiar story.
Yes. So I'm curious, the evolution of your driving setup.
Yeah.
And how you got back into driving, and then we can talk about someone who's just starting this journey, you know, what they can be asking and looking for. So we'll start with kind of seeing your driving journey. So like, did you even know you could get back into driving after your injury? How did that come up? How did you?
Yeah, so I was aware that wheelchair vans existed before my spinal cord injury. And I was aware that people could drive with hand controls, because I had an aunt that could drive with hand controls. But you don't really know all the nuances that are there. You know, you just think wheelchair vans exist. Okay, cool. Got it, right? And then you just live your life until you wake up and you need one. So it's one of those things that, you know, after getting a literal crash course in it, you just kind of she's like, this is
terrible. I picked up on that one. Well played.
Oh man. So after getting the crash course into it, it's just one of those things that, like, I had that conversation, as I mentioned before, with my case manager in rehab. She got me with my vocational rehab, you know, representative, counselor, whatever they're calling themselves in the state. And they got me an appointment with Steven Ice, who's our local CDRS, which is, God, I don't remember what exactly CDRS, certified driving rehab, something. It's a CDRS, something. It's an official mm-hmm. title. But he's basically the local driving OT, and he goes around and he's the one that, you know, prescribes you your hand controls, works with you to figure out what's going to work, and, you know, tries to work. He's basically the one that writes the prescription that United Access fills. So United Access is kind of the pharmacist in this instance. Mm-hmm. We don't actually get to tell you what you need. We just got to read the script and give you what we're told. And so, you know, working with him, I knew that driving in a power chair at that time, I was fortunate that I was a paraplegic, that I could do this, but I also had a TBI at the time that gave me some 6 nerve palsy that had my eye looking all wonky, and fixed with surgery, thanks to an awesome doctor that now I get to win shooting competitions with. So I'd say her surgery work was excellent. And just kind of took it from there. Steve Ice got me in with United Access. I told them that I knew I wanted a van, and we kind of talked about, you know, just the size. You know, I was 6'3" before my accident. I mean, I still am, just sitting down. but it's one of those things that, you know, as a 6'3" guy, you know, 200 plus pounds, you're big, you know, you take up a lot of space, and, you know, big guys equal big wheelchairs. You know, you don't get to be the dainty little one, whenever you're that large. So, being able to turn around in a vehicle and navigate was really important. And that was kind of one of the things that I was already a Toyota person pre-accident because I owned Land Cruisers and did, you know, 4x4 camping and all that fun stuff prior, and ended up just, you know, being kind of biased, but it turns out it worked. It was the correct decision because they have a bigger interior that you can turn around in, which I wouldn't have been able, or I probably would have been able, but I wouldn't have been as comfortable doing it. I'd have had to make a few more turns, kind of like Austin Powers, and, you know, backing up Mini in the hallway. And like a Honda, the Odyssey, which is also a great van, but, you know, just a little tighter on the interior. So it's, you know, you just kind of figure out what works, go through that process. He prescribed what he thought I needed. We talked about it, you know, kind of didn't have any objections because, you know, I'm new to this. He knows what he's doing, and had a lot of trust and not rebuttaling, or I didn't even at that point had like really the knowledge to say, what about this? Right. Like, and fortunately his answers were pretty good. Like I continue to use that equipment in another vehicle that we have. So it's, you know, it's a pretty cool situation, but I was driving from the power chair is how I started. Cause like I said, I could do this, but like my arms, I couldn't do this as much. And I was pretty weak being like in a hospital for 70 plus days, from all the other, you know, wicked trauma that a motorcycle accident puts you through outside of just a spinal cord injury. And eventually as I transitioned to my manual chair, I came to the struggle that was, I want to be out in the world in my manual chair, but in order to do that, I have to drive from my power chair. So if one time I wanted to go to the family and I wanted to go to the zoo, and I was like, I want to roll around the zoo in my manual chair. So I drove to the zoo in my power chair, got out of the van, transferred to my manual chair. My wife had to drive my power chair back into the van so that we could lock it up. And it, you know, just kind of became a hassle because I just really did want to make that transition and be a full-time manual chair user for most of the time. And, you know, you just didn't have that freedom with the equipment that I had. So I had talked to my local store here, and I was like, hey, what about that like six-way transfer seat thing? Do you think, what does that look like? So we ended up getting one of those, which is, if you're not familiar with it, it's really cool. It's a seat that pulls back. It rides back really far and turns, and you can transfer to it. So it basically comes out the center of a wheelchair van is very empty because a wheelchair goes there, right? So with the front seat, it comes out and meets you, and you can kind of transfer to it, and then you just kind of ride it back to the driver's position, and then your wheelchair's secured in the wheelchair spot. So it doesn't matter if I drive it from, like, I've got it set up. I can roll up in my power chair and strap it down, or it's got a QLK, so I can roll up in that and it just locks in, or in my manual chair, you know, I just kind of just, you know, give it the quick tie down. But, you know, it really opened up the freedom for that, because now my wife could drive it without, you know, having to put it's removable. It's not that bad, but it is time consuming. And my wife is a shorter Asian woman. So the big seat and the mechanism for that is just a lot when you're trying to do it by yourself. Right. So it was one of those things that, you know, she could drive it. And we did do that a few times, especially when I had like a knee surgery and I couldn't drive. So she was kind of my driving Miss Daisy around with me in the back. But we had to make that decision of, you know, it wasn't quick for us, at least, of being able to just transfer it in and out in a quick fashion. It was usually like, oh, this is how we're going to drive for the next month until my leg heals and I can drive again. So, and then outside of that, we ended up, you know, kind of have that, well, what if we want to have a different vehicle you know. So we bought a new she drives it, but you know, we bought a new Subaru last year, put some hand controls in that recently, and so I've got the same hand controls in both vehicles, so they're, you know, you drive them both the same. Same equipment, and you know, I primarily daily the van, but it was really cool to be able to take that Subaru on a road trip and, you know, drive a car. It's always fun.
Nice. I've got two questions over here for that. Yeah. Came up in that one is going to take us back pretty far in your original answer, but when you were contemplating between the Honda, Toyota, and all that good stuff, it sparked a random question that I've probably, if I wasn't on this podcast with you, I just would like ChatGPT it or something because I'm curious. But when you know, when it comes to adapting vehicles, do people ever come to you and say, hey, pre-accident, I already own a Toyota Sienna. I just bought this 2025 Toyota Sienna 6 months ago. You know, could we adapt this one? Because my husband is now injured. Can we adapt this one to work? Like, do people retrofit or are they?
Yeah, so you can absolutely retrofit an existing vehicle. I believe bronze standards for that, just because I don't actually work in the sales environment, but I don't quote me on this, but I'm sure somebody will correct us in the comments. I believe it's 3 years, 30,000 miles. At least that's what I know. I think that's what like Missouri Voc Rehab. Gotcha. Would allow for a conversion of an older vehicle or a used vehicle. And you know, it absolutely can be done, but obviously Bronability doesn't want to convert too old of a vehicle, you know, or too high of a mileage one. Cause you know, it doesn't make sense in the long run to put that much money into a vehicle if it's not going to, you know, stick around for that long.
Absolutely. And the other one I think I was thinking about, and I absolutely know that they're portable when you talk about your hand controls. They're not portable, but you can get some that are modular because if you were to go rent a car, you can. I've noticed that option as a checkbox, you know, do you need a baby seat? Do you need, you know, all these things and hand controls often pop up. So it's got to be dependent on the type, right? Because there's no way that like.
Yeah. My both my official and my personal response on the portable style hand controls they're just sketchy. it's one of those things that I've never successfully rented a vehicle, and I don't know many people that have successfully rented a vehicle from Enterprise, even though they have it on their website. Usually they say like 72 hours, but really it's like, it seems like you have to give them like 6 months notice, to get that. But it's, usually like when it comes to just people doing the portable ones for themselves, they're just kind, you know, depending on the kind, because they're usually just very manual. Some of them are two sticks. Some of them are, you know, and it's just one of those things that like United Access as a rule of thumb, we just don't install the temporary ones just because, you know, litigious reasons and those kinds of things, but also just like as a user, like they are just kind of sketch too. So it is like as much of a no duh as it is kind of a legal situation, but it's definitely, a lot of people definitely use them. I know plenty of people that do. And I also know that if they drive a vehicle with permanent hand controls, especially like a SureGrip Featherlight setup, that's like electronic gas and, you know, like all the other stuff, like they're just like, whoa, this is pretty sick. You know, like they kind of have that no duh of like, oh, now I understand what the difference is. So
it's funny, it is, as you're saying that, it makes me think about, so when, you know, my friends that use ultralight wheelchairs, like you mentioned, you have a manual chair, I assume it's an ultralight wheelchair, but
yeah,
people who've resisted, who maybe they have not a spinal cord injury, but maybe they have some sort of neurodegenerative, and they're like, no, I got my mom or dad something off of Amazon, this wheelchair is just fine. And you see the person, because I mean, I was an athlete. I managed to break a few limbs in my day. And, you know, you're trying to propel your stuff around hospital and those janky hospital chairs. And it's like, it's not until somebody gets in their own custom configured
yeah,
wheelchair that's set up properly. They're like, whoa, hold on, this is a different ballgame. It's like, yeah, that janky little, you know, K4 you've been using that your mom bought off Amazon, not cutting it.
Well, especially considering some of those like hospital chairs and whatnot, which common phrase in the I'm sure in the wheelchair nerd world of, you know, it's hospital chairs almost like a derogatory term. I feel like when in spinal cord groups, right? Like, oh, nice hospital chair, right? Like, but I mean, just a lot of times it's they're bariatric chairs, so they have they have them to fit the widest possible person. Mm-hmm. So obviously, instead of pushing naturally, you know, with your arms at your side, you're pushing out here and it's awkward and you're bunching your shoulders and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's being able to just naturally use one is definitely a big deal. I mean, my personal chair, which is a ZRA titanium, one of the reasons why I love my manual chair is it just feels like an extension of your body, you know. Mm-hmm. Like it's really nice to be able to fidget, you know. Whenever I was a standing person, I was one of those that, you know, constantly rocked back and, you know, left and right on my feet, and my manual chair, I tend to, you know, I'm always either, you know, sitting in a, if you, 9 times out of 10, if you see me and we're just hanging out, I'm in a wheelie. And if I'm not in a wheelie, I'm just kind of like fidgeting around, you know? And it just feels natural. And that's one of the reasons why I love it, is because it does feel more natural than, you know, than a power chair that, you know, is a great piece of equipment, but, you know, it's this is all I can fidget with. And, you know, I feel like I need like a different, like maybe a different stim tool or something to keep me busy.
Oh, those little like poppet things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
For sure. So, all right. So then now you think about custom, you mentioned two great things. This is an awesome segue, cause I mentioned we've got clinicians that listen to this podcast too. So you mentioned the importance of having custom configured hand controls, about what a world of difference that makes. And then you also know firsthand the benefits of a custom configured wheelchair. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. This happened to a friend of mine. She has transverse myelitis. So she contracted the virus when she was very young, like maybe 2 years old. So her entire life, she's identified as a C4 spinal cord injury my entire life, even though I didn't have a true like traumatic injury. She's like, right. My body attacked itself basically. So when she got a new power chair, I remember she was really upset because the power chair manufacturer, and this was this was pre my time with Romeo, but the wheelchair manufacturer, she's really bummed because they changed the style of her arm support instead of a power wheelchair. And her van obviously is set up completely to drive, you know, appropriately. And when she pulled into her van for the first time, was super excited, couldn't try to get set up, and she's very, very little movement. And then she's like, I can't get to the drive because my, it was just like this instance. So with that said, you know, therapists oftentimes think about, you know, speccing out a chair and think about like how wide are the doorways, right? Are you able to get around the home? But knowing what you know, are there any questions, any tips or tricks or anything that you would tell a therapist who's working with somebody on speccing on a new wheelchair? And also the ATP, like what does the ATP do, the provider do, when they're like, the person calls them and says, hi, I can no longer drive my Toyota Sienna anymore because I can't access it. So anyway,
for sure. Well, I mean, even from I think one of the easiest things to keep in mind is we live in this is probably a left hand or right side of the road driving problem, where you drive on the left side of the car. Mm-hmm. Is for those people prescribing or setting up the wheelchair to keep in mind, if the person's going to be driving, that if the controls are on the left side of the wheelchair, if they're left-handed, mm-hmm. and they're going to be considering driving, you're not going to be able to swing that away when you're driving as easy. Mm-hmm. just because the you know the door's there, right? So mm-hmm. When I was driving from my power chair, I would drive in, and then I would have to, because I have a swing out, I'd have to swing it out and back, and then I could finish driving in. Because if I drove just straight in with my controls extended in the regular position, they just bash into the dash of the vehicle, mm-hmm. and it'd be bad stuff. So I would definitely say keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. That I know it's hard learning how to operate a wheelchair with a different hand if you're thinking about driving, but you know it's the small sacrifice for the extra bit of freedom for sure to be able to do that. That kind of stuff. I also think that it could be in your friend's case, I think that could be an easy one to take to a local, you know, whether it be United Access, Mobility Works, any of the mobility, you know, vehicle dealers that you have, and just kind of ask their opinion on mm-hmm. what can we do. If you have a good relationship or still have a relationship with your CDRS, with your driving OT, I would, you know, definitely text them and ask them their opinion. Obviously, if you have set up an appointment, that's a medical thing and a whole nother problem. But usually if you have their number, you can text them and ask them their opinion, or there could be an easy enough modification to make on either the chair or the vehicle side. Really, you know, it's case by case and it depends, but it's definitely the chairs and the vehicles are so modular that there's probably a solution. And, you know, it's,
for me, it's just another reminder that not to live siloed, and that's to the professionals they're listening to this, right? Like, so if you are a provider, you know, working as an ATP for a provider, and your client has this issue, and they're in the St. Louis area, I mean, they could always, in theory, call up United. Like, the guys could go over there together. Like, the ATP, mm-hmm. like, hey, meet me over at United Access. Like, let's just brainstorm together with their professionals, me and you, and just see what we can do to come up with. I think connecting just the provider thinking, oh man, I've got to figure this out by myself and rigging something up. It's like, phone a friend, you know, be friends with the people who are doing the wheelchairs.
Absolutely. And I mean, even if it's just like, even if the only person you know is me, mm-hmm. and you know, I don't work at a store, but I'm more than happy to always point somebody in the right way to do that. And even mm-hmm. what I also appreciate about just this industry in general is there's, you know, obviously it's easy to be like, you know, business versus business rivalries and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, everybody in this industry is really just here to help people. So like, if you live in Atlanta, you know, down, that's Shepherd, right? So like, if you live down in Atlanta, we don't have anything in Atlanta, so I can't help you there, but there are great dealers around Atlanta that we can definitely point you to, right? So it's definitely, you know, when in doubt, you can always call United Access and we'll put you in the right way. But at the same time, I also think that, you know, if you're aware of your local mobility dealer, give them a call and ask them. I mean, they're probably thinking about you guys and thinking, how do I get you to know me at the same time? So it's, you know, it's, you've pretty much got two industries that are both wallflowers at the school dance, and they're both afraid to ask if they want to dance sometimes. So I think that's kind of where like my position comes in, is to, you know, try to get everybody off the wall and saying like, hey, it's more fun out here in the middle. So
you're the guy in the center of the dance circle being like, come on guys. Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like, let's do a dance circle. Okay.
As long as I'm not the woo girl, that's all that matters.
All right. Well, let Hawken be the woo girl. All right, Hawken, you can be the woo girl. And then now you can ask some woo girl questions. Just kidding.
I honestly don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's just a girl at, it's like, traditionally it's the person at a party that just like, just, she maybe had a little too much to drink or something, and just starts, woo, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Woo girl questions then. you know, Ryan, you had brought up, before we started recording, some stories of some people that were able to drive. And, you know, I'd love to hear maybe one or two of those stories to, you know, for the end users that are listening and also therapist providers, just to get a sense of what is possible with driving and how you can overcome certain obstacles to really get to driving again.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the first one that comes to mind, he hasn't started his journey yet, but we've been talking, and you guys probably either know him or at least are aware of him. Jared Nieder, the Positively Paralyzed.
We know Jared.
He recently just moved from Louisville, and I slid in his DMs a while back too. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I do. Is I just
he's been on the podcast too. He was on for season one. Going
to heck yeah! But he but I slid into his DMs and I was like, hey man, like love what you do, and we kind of talk about some stuff, and then eventually he hit me up because he was like, hey man, I'm moving from Louisville to Denver, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh sick, I actually like can help you there because we have United Accesses there. And I was like, what's the deal? What do you like? Are you driving? Kind of have those conversations. He's like, no, he wasn't driving. You know, and basically what he was saying was that there's, you know, waiting for so long, the wait list for driving OT is pretty long there, and the driving programs and that kind of stuff. So being able to move to Denver and working within the CREG network and that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, it seems like they're gonna be kind of fast tracking that situation. So I was like, dude, that's awesome. Like, can we be a part of that story? Can we follow along with you? How do we do this? You know, we actually just remodeled one of the stores with our new what we call the gold standard of accessibility for us, which is one of those things where we noticed most of our stores weren't as wheelchair accessible as we thought they were. And so it was, you know, just a company-wide initiative to fix that. And also just refresh it too, because there's, you know, after 25 years of being in business, you know, some of your locations are a little tired than when you opened them. So we did that one, and it's like the you know, all the newest best stuff, you know, it's got the cool video wall and the you know, all the demo units and that kind of stuff. So they're really excited to follow him in his driving story and just see where that goes, because like, I mean, obviously, since you guys know him, he's such an amazing Positively Paralyzed person.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, I'm just so glad to be able to tell a story like that, because it's one of those things where, you know, people like myself, you know, I drove before my accident, obviously, and people that are either born with or have their situation before they're the age to drive. Mm-hmm. Not only do you have to learn how to drive, but you have to learn how to drive differently than everybody else, you know? Mm-hmm. So it does open up some complications there. So it's just cool to be able to see that the answer to both of those is always starting with your local driving OT and going from there. So it's,
I think also this happens within the wheelchair industry. A lot of times people hear me refer to the F word. The F word of the wheelchair industry is funding.
Yeah.
And I know that's likely because, especially with you guys, your equipment is not considered medically necessary.
Correct, yeah.
So what are some of those avenues that folks can look towards? Because if they go on your website, they're going to have sticker shock like
everyone. Yeah, no, that's what I was...
Like, when you see MSRP, no matter where you're
at. I was going to get into that for sure. And that's one of my biggest frustrations with us is that, you know, if you don't know the things that I know about how to get funding or find funding or that any of those things exist, you're definitely going to get sticker shock when you go on the website, because you're going to go and you're going to see that a brand new wheelchair accessible brown ability vehicle is $90,000. And you're like, why is it so expensive? And then like, I can tell you why, is because the amount of work that went into to make it that way. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, you know, in my case, I touched on it earlier that like I went through vocational rehab. Vocational rehab paid for, you know, over pretty much half of it, right? So the they covered $50,000 worth of modifications and the conversion. And then I just paid for the flat vehicle. So like in my head, the marketing campaigns always worked like, and you can't do this for every state. I'm sure there's some kind of asterisk and small print that would go with it. But like in my head, it would work like Ryan, you know, like a customer testimonial story of like, here's Ryan. He got his 2022, Toyota Sienna as low as $45,000. Because that's the true story, and then right. You know, with third party funding. So, if you're a veteran, you've got a ton of options that are swallowed up by political reasons that I'm sure everybody's aware of in this industry. And there's just so many foundations or charities, 501c3s, you name it, that have different avenues to help get funding, or, you know, whether it be like a Help Hope Live situation, mm-hmm. or, to raise funding, or a Bridge to Mobility kind of thing, where like, you know, that the whole point of that one is like, you know, maybe you've got some money, but you're still $5,000 to $10,000 short, and their charity is focused on that last little thing to help bridge you to get you across the finish line. So, and then you've got awesome situations like Houston Children's Charity that this year, you know, they delivered 60 vans to families. And, you know, like, yeah, like at the same time, it was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my short time in this industry. But like just to see 60 vans go to families in need free of cost is just fantastic. So there's plenty of money to be found. You just have to be tenacious and figuring out where it is. And luckily there's usually a cheat button, and it's usually your local Brownability dealer is going to know how to help you figure out what you even qualify for, what's out there for you, you know, because MS is going to have different things than spinal cords, and spinal cords, you're going to have different things than ataxia. And, you know, there's so many different things that, you know, open the door to so much different funding too. So the money's out there. It's just that we have to find it. And it's, you know, I think it all just starts with the conversation. So
yeah, no, that's good to know. I think even in my head, thinking about upgrading to something like a joystick control,
yeah,
like that in and of itself is $100,000. I'm like, how does
the EMC stuff, and it takes like, I think it takes like it's like 60 hours to install, it's a ton of labor. Like it's really, but it's like so cool to watch happen, right? Because then like you said, like the joystick stuff or the any of the way that the EMC stuff works is just, I mean, it's just amazing. Cause it's kind of like, if you're familiar enough with adaptive gaming to know how many different ways you can play video games as a disabled person, there are equally as many different ways to use driving controls. So it's, you know, it can be overwhelming for sure, but it's definitely possible.
I think we didn't quite get to record this part of it earlier, but we were even talking about like there's sip and puff options.
Yeah, well, so like, and it's very rare, but like I've seen it, right? Like it's you know, because it's also one of those things that, you know, and as you know, as a person in the wheelchair industry, not everybody that has a sip and puff is even qualified to drive their own chair sometimes. So you got to be pretty exceptional with it to be able to be passable in a vehicle with it too. Right. Cause you know, now you're dealing with traffic.
Indeed. And then there's some folks, I don't know if you've ever seen this in your adventures either of you, but there are some folks that I don't know, I'm trying to figure out how someone was driving their power wheelchair. I was like, what are they doing? Cause I couldn't see them move. And they just were able to move with one switch, but they were that fast, the one switch, one step switch scanning, And I had no clue what they were driving with that. So, I mean, it all depends on, you know, everybody is absolutely their own individual case situation. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in the case of like Ryan Hudson-Peralta, right? Like, look, mm-hmm. Mom, no hands, right? Like his setup is amazing too, right? Mm-hmm. Like is driving with no hands. Like that's, yes. That's, you know, if you're not familiar with them, look him up. He's a great, influencer and shows off plenty of his driving endeavors. You know, it's there's just so many different ways to do it. It's really just cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. Well, to be honoring of your time, we'll kind of wrap up with some fun little questions we like to ask our guests. So if you can wave a magic wand and fix one thing about the CRT industry, what would it be?
Oh man. Do we get to include insurance in this?
Yes.
As part of the insurance?
Yeah.
I like that. Hawken knows exactly where I'm going instantly when I ask that. So I think the biggest thing that I would change is just the authorization process, man. Like, I had a situation, you know, personally, and I know that I'm not the only one where my wheelchair broke. Those are my legs, and it took 6 months for the thing to get fixed, right? So it's like, you know, imagine breaking your legs, having to ask a doctor to write you a note for permission to fix it. Uh-huh. Then getting, you know, then taking what they have like 90 days to approve that. Then doing that and going through the kind of stuff. And it's just, I think that if we could just speed up some insurance processes, it would make a ton of people's lives better, just mm-hmm. quality of life. And just kind of go from there. Cause it's, you know, the DMEs are, you know, and the CRT suppliers, like, they're not trying to hold out on you guys. Right. I swear they want you to have your equipment fixed and back, but you know, it's definitely, there's definitely some bureaucratic situation with the way insurance works and it just sucks.
Mm-hmm. So who is someone in the complex rehab world that inspires you?
So I think it's for me off the top of my head, it's an ATP, OT locally here named Sue Tucker. She's a do you know Sue?
I've met her, yeah.
All right, so Sue's been an awesome person in my journey. She was trying to, for the longest time, you know, probe me into going and getting into wheelchair rugby and that kind of stuff, since you know she's on the coaching team for that side of things. And like, I was always like, I mean, it looks cool. Wheelchair rugby is awesome and I love watching it, but it's just too violent for me. And I'm afraid of falling out of my wheelchair and all this other stuff, right? And that's just a part of life in that. And I jokingly say it because Sarah Adams, also a person that I know and a local St. Louis wheelchair user and Paralympian wheelchair rugby.
Pretty sure I know Sarah. Yeah.
Yes. You know, she's a Paralympian, and it's just one of those things. It's like, man, wheelchair rugby is too violent for me. I'm just going to stick to shooting guns. so that's my stance on that. But she was always here to push me, either helping figure out the equipment that I could use or how to use it, or always just pushing just to do more. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in all of our journeys, right? Like, you know, admittedly, spinal cords, we got to admit, guys, we're pretty privileged in the world of wheelchair users, because we have the worst day of our life happens with our spinal cord injury. And most of the time we get better, or we learn how to use our bodies, and, you know, life levels out after that for the most part. Where, you know, people with debilitating diseases and all, you know, all these other stuff, like, they have the worst day of their life sometimes, and then it continues to get worse. So, you know, it's just, I try to keep my mind just that kind of stuff on top of mind, just because, you know, when, especially in situations like now, like I'm a one of the, we have a lot of wheelchair users in our company, but I'm the only one at the corporate level. So I find myself being, you know, inadvertently being the voice, right, of a lot of people. And I just try to keep that in mind because, you know, I don't know what it's like to, you know, to go through what Håkan went through, but I can be empathetic of, you know, we both need to open bathroom doors. We both, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things that she helped me realize that, you know, I'm just thankful for every day. So.
And then last few questions, what is one feature design improvement you like to see in the next generation of seating and mobility, you know, from your perspective as an end user?
All right. So fun story time on that. I actually pitched this to someone who was interviewing at Permobil for an R&D position recently. Uh-huh. He didn't end up doing the job, but he did bring it up. And I had this thought while I was in Seattle. Uh-huh. And if you've ever been to Seattle, it's crazy hilly. And I'm an F1 fan. So they have this thing called kinetic braking, right? Where uh-huh. when you let off the accelerator, it, you know, the recaptures some energy and, you know, also kind of helps slow you down. So if we could do a smart drive feature or something similar that could also act as a brake going downhill, I think, you know, especially like for quads that have limited hand function when it comes to braking in those situations, right? Like, uh-huh. I think it would be cool to have a smart feature that could do something like that. I know I'm talking some weird future tech probably or whatnot, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, no, I mean, the good news is our VP of R&D does listen to the podcast. He was a guest one time. And so he
heck
does
yeah.
listen. So Dan, hopefully you're listening to this episode because Ryan just had a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it would work. That's for engineers and stuff, but I mean, that's the dream, right? Is to be able to, you know, not bomb a hill unintentionally and be able to, you know, I don't know if it's a switch or a setting or something on your smart drive that you have to do or something that you do on the app, but it's, you know, I could see a lot of use cases for people also being not just moving, but being able to stop and slow down, I think would work out great for some people. Yeah, that's my product pitch idea.
I think it's good to be able to stop. So,
right. Yeah. It's not overrated.
It applies to driving too. So finally, what makes you a wheelchair nerd, Brian?
Man, I mean, I would say just my passion for just looking at some of the cool stuff that this industry has to offer, right? Like, I've not yet made it to an Abilities Expo, but I watch the social media and the people that do things. And I mean, like, you see some, you know, obviously, like, what, last year, 2 years ago, Permobil announced the carbon fiber chair, and that thing's pretty sick. There's some other innovative companies that have some really cool stuff that are, you know, I think that it's one of those things that competition is going to breed some innovation.
Yep.
And, you know, like I put the bowhead casters on my tie light frame, and I didn't get struck by lightning. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're just sick, right? Like I had some extra FSA money on my account, and it's use it or lose it, right? So I was like, all right, $500, here's some cool casters, and I feel good about myself because now I feel like I got a new pair of shoes, right?
Yeah.
And you know, those guys, Rove makes some really cool stuff and has some interesting features with their 3D printed titanium stuff. I mean, I think what makes me a wheelchair nerd is just the fact that I'm just watching all the coolest stuff that's ever been created for wheelchairs happening at the same time. Uh-huh. And it's just cool to be a spectator, let alone somebody that's mildly connected to the industry.
Yeah, it is fun. That is, and the most interesting thing and what I like about this industry is, yes, competitiveness, I think, breeds innovation.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, I've talked to the people at Bowhead. It's like, you know, we all talk, and because everyone just gets so excited about what's the, you know, the new thing, because we know that at the end of the day, we're helping people be able to live their best life. So
right. Yeah.
Cool.
That's great.
Ryan, it was awesome meeting you. I'm so glad you slid into our DMs.
Yeah, for sure.
You will be back, I'm sure. Just one thing, just don't know if you, how far you like to drive, but it's not an Abilities Expo, but in Kansas City every year, there's the Accessibility Summit.
Yeah.
It's a one-day event. So I know we always go to that one too. So
And that's a four-hour drive for me, so that's not a big deal. I can definitely go make that. And knowing that it's in Kansas City, I would say we should probably also be there and sponsor it, maybe, or something. Yeah, so
you can look them up. On Google, because it's a small group that puts them on. It's a really cool event.
Yeah, the wheelchair scene in Kansas City alone is just cool. I mean, they just had they had the wheelchair football Super Bowl there last year. I mean, there's so much cool stuff to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Love it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, guys, for listening to another episode. We appreciate you guys, and we will catch y'all next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening to me ramble.
See y'all.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast, too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. Along with the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds.